Attention everyone, this is an emergency broadcast. The loud frequency coming from your radio is not a mistake. Do not turn off your radio, but instead turn up your radio as loud as it can go. Do this so we can broadcast this frequency as loud as possible.
And welcome to another episode of Game Stuff. I'm your gaming gal, Kalai, and today I'm joined with Roberto. What's up, Roberto?
Greetings, everybody. Coming off of a really wonderful beginning to the week, thanks to Universal Screenings, I got a free screening to a movie called First Man, starring Ryan Gosling. Here's the quick review. It's awesome. Go see it.
Matt unfortunately can't make it this week. He said he was going to, but he is stuck in traffic.
Yeah, and also at this time, there's a lot of severe weather happening north of us. I'm thinking Boston, this area is like where he lives is getting hit pretty bad. So I'm thinking that might be it too. So, but yeah, well, hopefully we'll see Matt soon. We miss you, bud.
Now, this week's topic of the show is we want to get in on that PS Classic that Sony is releasing, so we will be talking about that tonight. But before we do, let's get into some housekeeping. If you do like us, please subscribe and rate us. It does help out our podcast. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at GameStuffCast, and you can search our Facebook page for GameStuff Podcast. Now, let's get this party started as we always do. Roberto, have you been playing anything fun this week?
No, everything I've been playing is absolutely miserable and terrible.
It happens. we're reviewers at this point.
Yeah. So, like I said, like lately, I've been trying to I've been on the go a lot lately. You know, with things going on, and so a lot of the games I've been playing has been on the on a more mobile spectrum. But I'm trying to work my way back to consoles. It's nothing bad about PS4 or anything. It's just, you know, the fall beginning and everything, I've been, you know, just kind of busy. But in any case, all right. So, first up, from the Nintendo side of things, I was playing a couple of games, but namely Wandersong, which you talked on before. And
yes.
It's still very, very good. I'm on Act 3, and it's getting better and better. I'm not going to lie, Act 2 was definitely a moment on the feels train, because for reasons I don't want to spoil, but
okay, but after the podcast you'll have to tell me, because I'm way past that.
Oh yeah, I know, but it was actually really neat, you know. And once again, a big compliment to the sound design and the visual design of this game. Was playing not a very well known Japanese bullet hell shmup, but it's there. It's called Danmaku 3 Unlimited 3. Danmaku Unlimited 3. I know you haven't heard of that.
No, I know a lot of Japanese RPGs, but sometimes you come up with stuff that I'm like, wow.
No, this is a shmup.
Oh, even
a spaceship
still.
Shooter. Which is actually pretty cool. It was $10 on the Nintendo eShop, and it has a rockin' score, guitar and drums and everything while you're shooting alien ships. It's great if you're on the go, especially if you need like something you want to play for like a quick 10 minutes or something like that. It's hard, but really, really cool. I like it. Very well done on the Switch there. I also picked up Ikaruga, which is like a legendary spaceship shooter I need to play. But, so I'll hopefully get around to that. Next, and then of course I played Paladins, which everyone knows what Paladins is, so no real talking about that, but I just have to say it's great playing that game on the Switch, especially when you're at a Starbucks, and you, like, log in on the Switch on the Google Wi-Fi, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm kicking, you know, butt in Starbucks. This is a real esports, destination. Anyway, next up, in what I've been playing lately, I've been revisiting Guacamelee.
I could not get into that game.
Ah, Kalai, you're killing me.
I know.
Especially this time of year now, you know, with Halloween, Dia de los Muertos. Oh, man. So, for those that don't know, Guacamelee is a wonderful Metroidvania-inspired video game where you are actually a luchador. You're a luchador thanks to the spirits of the dead. So you see, you're a regular, ordinary guy. You're helping out the mission and in your village in Mexico, and you're getting ready for the Dia de los Muertos and everything. And then this evil mariachi shows up with his own little gang, and they start wreaking havoc. The undead start seeping into our world, trying to merge the worlds of the living and the dead. So similar to something like Ghostbusters a little bit. And they kill you. And it turns out you're in the land of the undead. You pick up a mask belonging to a legendary luchador, and you become, you know, a legendary luchador. You got super strength. You can do suplexes. You just punch the crap out of skeletons. All against a really, really wonderful, eclectic, like very Mexico-inspired art style. I don't know what it's called. I'm sure there's a professional word for it, so pardon me. But, like, the eclectic and very illustrated art styles of, like, Dia de los Muertos and Mexican art are in this game. And the music soundtrack's great. It's a wonderful game. So the sequel came out. I have not played it yet, but I'll tell you, the music for the sequel was done by a band called Mariachi Entertainment System. Now, I want you to imagine Mega Man, Castlevania, and all your favorite Nintendo themes done mariachi style. It's hands down one of the best albums I've ever heard, because it's mariachi. It's trumpets. It's you know, vocals and stuff. It's wonderful stuff if you can hear it. Anyways, moving forward here, what else have I been playing? More Cosmic Star Heroine, more God Eater, and have I talked about Wolverblade before with you, Kalai?
What is it?
Wolverblade.
No, I don't know what that is.
I didn't? Oh, that must have been before I joined. Oh, man. Okay, here we go. It's on the Switch, too, so, and you should totally play with your friends. The game Wolverblade was released in February of this year. It's the passion project of Darkwind Media and a creative director, Mike Harreld, that's been lasting for over 6 years. Darkwind Media and his company and Harreld's company, Fully Illustrated, spent the last 6 years trying to create a authentic historical experience of a very lesser known part of ancient history, and that is the Roman invasion of Britannia, which is today England. You mm-hmm. are a member of the Northern Tribesmen of the Wolves, and you fight back against the Romans. So think it's basically Braveheart, but you're fighting against the Romans. So, but the thing is, visually, the game is done in like a very Samurai Jack, Getty Tartovsky inspired art style. Additionally, the game actually has it also has like a lot of really good voice acting, and then also the animation is visceral. Like it's bloody, it's a side scroller beat 'em up brawler, kind of like Streets of Rage. It's just wonderful. It's a wonderfully
action game. Oh, I was going to ask too what type of game it was.
So like you can play with you and a buddy, and you mope through Roman soldiers as boss fights. But, like, the thing is that everything you see in the game is historically accurate.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, the guy spent 6 years making this game, but part of it was he went all over Britannia, so, like, what today is England, going to ancient battlefields, going to museums, studying ancient artifacts, and he took pictures and video and put it in the game. So when you finish a level, he'll be like, when making Wolverblade, we came to this area, which used to be an ancient fort, that belonged to the Roman Empire. And it's like, I like that. I'm a bit of a nerd, I admit, with history and space, if anyone doesn't know. But I like that stuff. I'm from the time when History Channel and Discovery Channel gave things about history and discovering things, not Pawn Stars and UFO conspiracy crap. You know?
Wait a second. What the hell's wrong with Pawn Stars? I fucking love that show.
There's nothing wrong. It's just History Channel does nothing but give that all day. Have you ever looked at the programming?
Yes, I actually have watched all-day marathons of Porn Source.
Collide,
for 12 hours straight.
It's the History Channel. You're supposed to learn about history. Like, you know, Pearl Harbor and the like the American Serengeti, that is the Midwest, and the Buffalo Roam and Davy Crockett, you know? Porn Source is great, like, you know, for like, I don't know, an hour, because everything has history to it. But it's like what watching that all day is like watching Teen Titans Go all day. That show is vehemently despised, although I heard the movie was good. Or like, you know, how like Discovery Family now has MLP all day instead of Transformers. But that's another story. In any case, Wolverblade, awesome video game. It took me a long time to get one of the bosses done because I wanted to get the trophy for it. Great action hack and slash brawling video game. Highly recommended for everybody on PS4, Switch, and every other platform. Lastly, before I move on to you, Kalai, let me see if there's another game in here I have not touched upon. Okay, Warhammer, 40,000 Inquisitor. Did I talk to you about Stay?
What's Stay?
I didn't talk to you about Stay? Oh, shit!
No! What's Stay?
Oh, wait a second. Yes, I did. Remember when I interrupted you and before we went on to our main topic 2 weeks ago? I went on, like, that big rant?
I'm lucky I know what I did over the weekend.
Oh, okay. All right, well, Stay was, I can explain it real quick again. Stay is an actual interactive visual novel puzzle-solving mystery where a young man is captured, and he is against his, and he's captured against his will. He's kind of a down-in-the-dumps kind of a guy. Like, he has a day job, but it's, you know, but he left it, and he's depressed and stuff like that. So this random person captures him, and he doesn't know why. He goes to a computer and discovers that you are on the other end of the computer. He's asking for help, so it's up to you to guide him to making the best decision possible, given his predicament. So you'll guide him through this mystery of what's going on in this home and, you know, who captured him, how to get out. And the game happens to find itself rooted within the themes of mental illness, depression, anxiety, things like that. And it's actually, keep in mind, this is not a game that is morbid or makes you feel bad or like beats you to a pulp. Like, there are games like Three Fourths Home. You play that and you're like, you feel really, really down in the dumps for about a good 10 hours or so. That's what happened last year. I played Three Fourths Home and that was like, I could not do anything. I try to watch Batman to get me back on my feet and I'm like, I can't. I'm so sad about this game. There's also other games that try and handle that differently. Like, you know, in one case, there was a nightmare one. I think it was called Neverending Nightmares, but that's another story. This one, though, this is a young man named Quill. You know, he asks you questions or you talk to him. And, you know, the decisions that you make will determine the ending. They'll determine what he does. And even when you log out of the game will determine how he does. Because, like, one time I logged out of the game for too long and he, like, just got mad and destroyed his computer. So it was game over for me. So I had to start the chapter again.
Oh, I'd be screwed in that game.
Yeah. Well, even now, I haven't played since, like, I don't even know when. And it's, like, it's tough in my day and age, you know, like with the job and everything, and it's like, and moving around. So it's a great game, though. Great game because the music's phenomenal, the visuals are phenomenal, the graphics are phenomenal, the story is really neat. And also, like, if people are tuned out to the whole visual novel thing, this is more of like an interactive type of thing where people can, you know, really get into it and get to know, and get to kind of feel, you know, around like having a say in the story. Because some of these visual novels, they have like little choices, but the overall narrative does not change. So it's very nice to see that there's something there that, you know, that's there. And that's about it in terms of other games. The other ones are games that we talked about. Warhammer Martyr, which is like a game I'll probably be playing from now till like next summer. You know, like I said, on the PC I'm sure it's better, but the PS4 is functional. It's okay, it's solid. I kind of wish it was PC standard, though, but it's still pretty good. And then, you know, Spider-Man and Cosmic Star Heroine I've talked about, and even Earth Defense Force 2025, which I haven't talked about yet, but that's a really fun twin-stick shooter game. There's actually a new Earth Defense Force coming out real soon. And then the other stuff I've talked about before, Shikondo, Soul Eater, Pizza Titan Ultra, Space Hulk, Deathwing, yep. next week I'll try and play Shift Quantum, Phantom Doctrine. There's a bunch of other games that I just received, And I'll tease one thing here a little bit. There's a game I just received for the Switch called Exoder. As in E-X-O-D-E-R, it's a fantasy tactical game. So we'll have to wait and see. So what about you, Kalai? What have you been up to?
Well, I have been playing a couple of games. I went back and played a little bit more Monster Hunter, because I just love that game, but I kind of had to pull myself away from it, because I would literally do nothing but play that game, which is probably bad. Yeah. Especially when you have a podcast. But I also picked up a different game that I've been wanting to play. I actually picked it up a while ago, and this weekend coming up is Comic-Con, New York City, for those that don't know, and I go every year. And I pick a Switch game, I pick a DS game that I can easily carry with me, and would be good to put down and pick up, you know.
One way down the line, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I picked Phoenix Wright Trilogy, because I've never played them.
Right, that's actually headed to the PS4 next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I got to actually get a taste of that. So tell us, Kalai, like, how does this game make the Court of Law entertaining and fun? I don't know about our younger viewers out there, but you and I are both adults. We both dread JD, jury duty.
Yeah, well, if jury duty was anything like Phoenix Wright, I might actually go.
Oh, of course.
You actually play Phoenix Wright, who is a lawyer. And I'm starting from the first one. I've never played them before. So the trilogy, you can pick up the trilogy on sale on 3DS every once in a while, or you can even pick them up. I think it's like $30 or $35 for all three games, which is not bad. And in the first game, this is literally your first case. And I've just taken all my first case. And the character is like, oh my god, I hope I'm going to do this right. And you have to like remember stuff. And so the nice thing about it, it is a visual novel. So there's not a lot of huge actions, a lot of reading. So if you're going to like be on a bus, or if you're going to be, you know, at a convention and waiting in line, it's probably a great game to play.
Right.
Yeah. That's so cool. I mean, I'm not that far into it. I'm hoping to get a little bit more into it, especially with the con coming up. You do have to investigate, just like in things like Danganronpa. You have to investigate so you can find all the clues. And you have to know when to present those clues to the defendant or the witness you're talking to so you can get more information. Or even in the courtroom, you have to prove what they're saying is wrong with the evidence. And a couple of times I've been wrong because I'm just like, I don't understand. Because it is a bit of a logic game.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've seen the cutscenes, and it's like, I think infamously one person, like, there was a girl who, like, murdered somebody, and even though that's, like, kind of morbid how they did it, like, once Phoenix Wright started to, did the objection, and started, like, laying down the evidence, the girl started, like, you know, she started freaking out, gets, like, sweating and everything, and she, like, you know, in straight up anime style, gets totally defeated on the stand. So it was actually kind of like, I mean, that was one cutscene I saw, and then there's an anime based off of it, and there was a live action thing that was based off of it. So it is, and I know that what was it, Professor Layton did a crossover or something?
Yes, you're right. Professor Layton did do a crossover, which I'm a huge fan of the Professor Layton games as well. I think they're also really good games.
I mean, I never played those games, but they reminded me of what was it, Tintin? The Adventures of Tintin or something on Nickelodeon, I think it was called.
That was way past my time.
No, it happened. You might have been like 20-something years old when that came out.
Yeah, again, way past the time I was watching Nickelodeon.
I'm 30 years old. I still watch cartoons. I have no regrets. Like the Amazing World of Gumball. We don't deserve that show.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Again,
The Amazing World of Gumball. Oh, that's awful.
Way past my time.
That's awful. Well, actually, it's a show on today, but that's awful.
Well, let me just explain this to our viewers. A lot of these stuff is, like, past my time, including Rick and Morty. I don't get Rick and Morty. I couldn't even get through an episode.
Rick and Morty came out, like, 2 years ago.
I know. It's way past my time, and I still don't get it.
Ah, come on. No. Rick and Morty is, like, it's literally an unapologetic tribute to sci-fi. It is... I mean, sure, it has great humor, crazy writing, but like each episode is like it's a little tribute to like it sci-fi, Inception, interdimensional type sci-fi storytelling, time travel, Back to the Future, everything. I binged season one, so I gotta finish the other two. And there's a VR game for it that I actually want to get one of these days. Hopefully, if it goes on sale for the holidays. And where it's like, you know, it's like, you know, you're Rick and Morty, but it's a VR. So, and now they're like, they're prepping for like 70 something episodes by next year or something, which is insane. But I mean, I was kind of like on the fence about it. But then once I started watching it, I just started like, I almost like choked on my whatever I was drinking or eating, like laughing because it was just so funny. It's not for everybody, yeah, but it's really good.
I've also been playing more Dead Cells because I'm just so addicted to that game. Like, that game is so good if you like roguelites. Even I'm not a big roguelite fan, and this game is like gets my attention because it just the progression. I just love the progression in that game, and I just want to play it more. What else have I been playing? Candy Crush on my phone because I've been playing mobile
games. Lame. That's like the epitome of microtransactions and shit crystals. But to be fair, I did play Warhammer 40,000K Free Blade on my phone, which is actually like a like you touch the screen and you like shoot things on in a giant mech. Because lately, like with thanks to Martyr and Deathwing, and now there's another Warhammer game coming out next week, which is another Space Hulk game, but it's like really high res and tactical and everything. I've been, like, getting really fascinated by the Warhammer franchise. I love, like, the universe that it's in, and I love how the armor and the way they speak and the fact there's, like, everything. Aliens, demons, interdimensional beings, mutants, people bonding their brains to machines, like electrokinesis stuff, so, you know, space travel. It's pretty neat. I mean, I'm a big fan of that stuff. Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't, I didn't have much, be able to have much time to play because I've been like, Septembers are always busy for me because it was my husband's birthday and, you know, I'd throw him a birthday party or some shit like that. I don't know. So I was prepping for that. And just as a little side note, because I know I'm sure we have a lot of Walking Dead fans out in there, I actually got in my loot crate the Walking Dead, the cookbook, and I cooked a recipe out of there. I made a vegan breakfast patty. It was really good. I really liked it.
All right, there you go. Most I've made is Guy Fieri's Mac Daddy mac and cheese. It took me about 3 hours, and I burned myself with Evo, the extra virgin olive oil. It was good. I never made it again, though.
Yeah, it happens. But yeah. Let's head over to our topic of the show, which is this new, this whole mini console revolution.
Yes, if I remember a line from Borat, the Borat movie. That is Igor. He's still a pain in my assholes. But I get him iPod. I get him iPod Mini. Everybody know that's for the gays. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. Borat.
Okay, so the NES Classic came out, and yeah. Then Nintendo followed it up with the NES Classic, the Super NES Classic. I'm sorry. And, you know, we speculated that PlayStation was going to do the same thing. People wanted PlayStation to do the same thing because there's a lot of Sony fans. And even you're a Sony fan. So this is going to be an interesting conversation. So I'm just going to run down what the NES Classic is, the SNES Classic is, and the Sony PS Classic is. So that way we have all the facts to compare them. So we have the NES Classic, which is $60, 30 games, which include games like Super Mario Bros., Metroid, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Zelda, Kirby's Adventure. It comes with one controller, but you can buy more. In comparison, the SNES is $80. It comes with great games like Final Fantasy III, Star Fox, Contra 3 Earthbound. It also comes with 20 games as opposed to the 30 for the NES, but you do get your extra console, your extra controller in the box with it, which is really nice. Now, the Sony PS Classic is $100. It doesn't come with a plug. It has 20 games. The five games that were announced were Final Fantasy VII, Ridge Racer Type 4, Tekken 3, Jumping Flash, and Wild Arms.
But it's Ridge Racer. Ridge Racer!
It doesn't come with an extra controller.
That was actually a meme from E3.
Oh, sorry.
The Ridge Racer? Oh, yeah. I guess that's past your time, too. But yeah, that's the thing with Ridge Racer. But look that up later. But anyways, continue your thoughts.
I don't know how I feel about this. It's a $100 console that doesn't come with a plug and 20 games.
I mean, yeah, I admit that was kind of you know what they're doing? They're trying to save money and also to get you to buy like the stinking AC adapter. Remember the 3DS? The new 3DS didn't even come with an AC adapter. I remember getting that thing on Christmas Day and being disappointed because I had to wait a whole day to get the charger. So I think it was just a way to save money, trying to make money, that kind of thing. I don't know.
That's a good point that you bring up. The fact that you're right, the DS didn't come with a charger, but at the same time, the reason they did that was because a lot of people already had the system. I bought it and had three chargers at home already.
Right.
How many people have a charger for a PS Classic?
Right. Like I said, I mean, I still think, you know, no matter what, you should put it in there. But at the same time, it's a polarizing thing, because you're right, because, you know, better to save resources when you can.
Right. And the other thing is that now you're making your console inherently more expensive than the rest of the comparisons. So right. Here's my first question to you, Roberto, as a big Sony fan. I mean, I know you're a huge Sony fan. Are you going to buy this?
I think so. I was like on the fence about it because it's like, do I really need to? Also, because it's another observation I want to make here in a later statement. But the thing is that like the SNES and the NES and even the N64, this system came at a time that is extraordinarily rooted within the very consciousness of American pop culture, entertainment, mainstream culture. This was like one of the first systems to become more than just a gaming system. This was something that everybody owned and everybody wanted to get a hold of. This was the thing that got people who didn't play games to play games. And then when you had the rich library of games that just changed the world, everything from Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, Final Fantasy, Metal Gear Solid, Air Combat, Gran Turismo, and a host of other games I can't even think of right now, you have memories that not only last forever, you have memories that will always last forever, not because of with the person that experienced them, but the persons that they share that experience with, you know, and these people, they talk about these games, and then other people, they talk about it with other people, and then more people get into it, and then they look up on YouTube, and it's like, wow, this was like a glorious time, you know, with low polygons and stuff like that. And for me, it's just like, looking back on it, I still remember I was like not even 10 years old. I came back home from Puerto Rico on a vacation, and the system was sitting right there, and that's when my life changed forever. I started playing a lot of random games like Colony Wars and Starfighter and the original Twisted Metal, but then I played games like Steel Rain, and I played Metal Gear, and I played Air Combat, all the Air Combat, so I was a big fan of flight and helicopter games. So, like, it's nostalgia, definitely.
I get nostalgia, and especially, right. Like, because I bought the NES and the Super NES Classic because I have nostalgia for Final Fantasy. I have nostalgia for Super Mario Brothers. I even have nostalgia for Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, because that was my era. But the PS Classic is, what could they put on there? I mean, Final Fantasy VII, I guess, is nostalgic. We haven't even gotten this remake that they're supposedly bringing us. We have no information on this remake. I know that they're bringing it on, but there's been no information.
Right, because they need to get Kingdom Hearts 3 out of the door.
And, I mean, Ridge Racer, I don't know, is that a nostalgic game for the system?
Yeah, it was one of the very first racers for the game. It was a launch title for the system. It was, one of the, it was a game that came before Gran Turismo. and other racer games like it. It's known for its, like, its
control. Right, PlayStation is known for Gran Turismo. Why not put Gran Turismo on there?
Right, I suspect that's what they're going to do. They're going to put one of the Gran Turismos on there.
The Tekken 3, I was never a Tekken fan to begin with.
That's a game I played on the demo disc.
And that's it, right?
Really big, I wasn't really big into fighters, but a lot of people really like it. There's one guy I know, the guy should go MLG with how he plays Tekken. He plays one of the more recent Tekkens, but the way he does it, the way he explains the mechanics. So there's just, it's a very different kind of a fighting game.
Jumping Flash, I have no idea what that game is.
That was actually another launch title. I remember seeing that in the rental stores. I think you fight aliens and stuff like that. It's a very strange game. My big thing was spaceships and, like, things with attitude. Like, I played a game called Off-Road Interceptor Extreme. I played another game called Total Eclipse. And I played another game, like, I can remember my launch lineup, like, growing up. I played games like Nova Strike, Jupiter Strike, no, Nova Storm it was called, Philosama, which was actually, like, a really niche shooter, Cleek, the DNA Imperative, Brahma Force, the Assault of Beltlogger 9. These are, like, the lesser-known games, but they were games that I
was going to say, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, but, like, those were the kind of things happening at the time. I mean, there's other games like Soul Reaver, which people swear by. I never played those. My point, though, back to my point, it's definitely, I think, just the design and that memory. But here's the thing, too, and this is where I think that the system's going to struggle. It's not by, and I don't think it's by NES and SNES. Sony actually neglected their, I don't care, I, of course, big fan of Sony. They actually did an about face on a very key component about their hardware, and that's that their hardware already had not only backwards compatibility to an extent, but also it already had a lot of these games. But when the PS3 launched, the PlayStation Network didn't really exist, but when it started to grow, PS1 classics were launched, and that allowed for people to play games like Jet Moto 2 and Destruction Derby. They allowed people to play games that like Agile Warrior, Black Dawn, a bunch of other racers and action games that, you know, you probably haven't heard of, but they existed. Siphon Filter, that was a very big trilogy at the time, and a host of other games. The same thing was applied to the PlayStation Vita and PlayStation TV. Right now, you can play 178 games with the DualShock controller or the DualShock 4, and you have, you know, all you have to just plug in and play. And it's for more or less the same price, you know. I mean, PlayStation TV is not sold here in the West anymore, but if you happen to find one for like $80, it's totally worth it. So now it's like, I think people are starting to realize there was this thing called the PlayStation TV and the PlayStation Vita that could do the same thing for much less without the use, you know, without the gimmicks and the tying ins of the AC adapter and all that stuff, but it exists. So now it's like Sony kind of did an about face with the PS3, PS Vita, PS TV, definitely, by ignoring the fact that those things could do that all along, instead of favoring this $100 micro console. That, keep in mind, too, this micro console does not have anything with twin sticks. It comes with two traditional, old-school PS1 controllers, which is that they didn't have the thumbsticks. The thumbsticks didn't happen until 1997 or 1998 with the release of Twisted Metal 3 and Crash Bandicoot Warped. And, So you have a directional pad, the traditional buttons, and that's all you have. So you have to play with the games. Like, some games, you had to get, like, you had to get a DualShock to play because it was required, you know, with the control input. So now, you know, you've got maybe a very finite portfolio of games that you can play up to 1998 when DualShock Analog 6 became the standard. So, I mean, there's still a handful of games that you can play that don't need the DualShock stick, but, you know, it's going to be hard to define. And also, maybe Sony might want to consider, maybe we need to get to release DualShock so we can expand our library. I mean, there's other games out there I remember that were big deals, like Rascal. Rascal was a platformer, a weird one. Enter the Gecko, Tomba. There was a very niche platformer game that didn't really, that I never played, but honestly, because it just sounded way too corny, called 40 Winks. It was, I remember the commercial because, like, you, it took place in a dream world and you could transform into a caveman, but the commercial said, huge monster, but it was a caveman. And there was a, and you could transform into a robot, which was basically like, you know, something with a helmet on. I just remember because they had a poster in my school back in grammar school promoting the game, and there was a quote that said, move over, Mario. I'm like, this game looks awful, but I guess it was okay. So, like I said, I was big into, like, you know, I was 10 years old at the time, you know. I want to play things with shooting and action and blowing things up. I don't want to play some kid that turns into a caveman. So, anyway. but thinking back on it, like just in closing, that's going to be perhaps the deciding factor, trying to define games that are going to be for that lack of a DualShock analog stick that are going to be really good. And then also, I once again, while the Vita and PS TV audience is rather small in comparison to the overall PlayStation base, they're still ferociously passionate and they do manage to get their, make their wave. So I'm thinking people are going to start to discover, like, yeah, you know, what's the point in owning this when they already had it all this time? But it is going to be pretty sweet to be able to have this, this very trademarked, unforgettable system available.
So do you think this is becoming a fad? Do you think this is like a gimmick?
I think that, you know, it's very funny because we've always been about micro mini things, making things tiny, like, or smoother or smaller. I remember that, like, so to the answer, that answer would have to be, this is definitely looking to be a trend. How far it's going to go, I don't think it's going to go terribly far because you have to factor in, like, you know, the need and the design and what you're going to have. So, like, I remember growing up, there was something called Hit Clips, these tiny little boom boxes. You put the microchip in and it plays, like, your favorite song for, like, a minute and a half, but people thought it was the coolest thing because it was this tiny little boom box you can put in your pocket and play, like, Usher and stuff like that. So, and then when you look at the iPod, I remember one of the biggest deals about the iPod was the iPod Nano, which was this little, it was an iPod, but it was like, it looked like a little USB drive kind of, or maybe not a USB drive, but it was like, it was small, it was thin, you could stick it in your pocket with your headphones, and it was just music. I kind of miss those because it was, you know, about music. So, like, making things mini, and also cell phones. Remember cell phones were big, and then they got smaller and smaller and smaller. And I remember in Zoolander, they made a comment about, like, the, there was a gimmick where, like, Zoolander had a cell phone. It was, like, this tiny little thing, and he had to, like, do this.
But, yeah.
And so, and then, like, so the context of making something smaller, slimmer, and faster, that's always been a thing. With this whole game system stuff, I admit, when the NES Classic was announced, I remember people were like, eh, this looks cool. And then it became, like, the number one item. Everybody was like, oh my goodness, like, it's disappearing. It's like, it's literally turning into thin air. People just grab it left and right, left and right. And then, so, like, Nintendo's like, we're gonna shut this down for a little bit. And I remember somebody saying, like, he posted a picture. He said, oh, I paid for my kid's college tuition today. And he just had a picture of a sealed box. But so I think just with that, and then now you have the SNES Classic, it's not that it's a fad and people are cashing in on nostalgia. It's that they're remembering, I mean, it kind of is that, but it's that they're, it's not mindlessly cashing in on nostalgia. Like, they're not just saying, oh, here's an SNES, but we're going to half bake it and just put crappy games on it. Like, we're going to make this thing genuine. We're going to make this thing with modern tools. We're going to make it affordable. And we're going to do, you know, bring that magic back into your living room of what it was like to play Mario Kart. Like, one nice memory over the summer was I played for the first time in 20 years Mario Kart with my sister. Regrettably, she still beat me. But then again, we were a couple beers in. So, and I also was being easy on her because she was, like, going left and right. We were on Koopa Beach. She kept going in the water. So anyway,
you keep telling yourself that one, Roberto.
Yeah. No. I had, like, I think, like, 2 or 3 Coors Lights, and she had, like, a glass of wine. But she gets, but, like, glass of, one glass of wine is like 3 glasses of wine for her. So. But it was cool because, you know, I have a nephew, a godson, and a niece, and they were laughing their butts off, and they thought it was the funniest thing ever, so I was happy about that. But anyways,
I was going to say that I think it didn't mean to turn into a fad. I think it did turn into a fad. I mean, with the NES Classic, they did put more out. You can go buy them in stores right now. I've seen them all over the place, which is pretty amazing. And the SNES Classic. To me, it was being able to kind of relive my childhood dreams, just having that thing sit on my desk. I actually have both of them are sitting on my desk, and when I look at them, they bring me back really good memories. I think Sony's just a money grab. I really do. The fact that there's no plug, and they're announcing games that aren't as... When I think of Sony, I don't think of Ridge Racer or Tekken. I think of, you know, things like, you know, Metal Gear Solid or things like that. So hopefully they put out more stuff that's more...
Right. And I think that one thing that's... But we are also, to accompany this, we are in an age of the HD remaster. We're seeing games from the PS2 and even the PS3 get remastered, maybe even slightly remade. The Yakuza games, they're being remade. The Odin Sphere, one of the best effing games ever on the Vita and PS4, got fully remastered. And I think that, you know, and then now, like you probably heard, Capcom said, okay, we're going to take this one game from Onimusha, the Onimusha line, and just bring it back, you know? And so we're in the age of the HD remaster, the HD remake, and, you know, making it better, making it sharper. And it sells, and it works. And it's like, once again, I wouldn't necessarily say cashing in nostalgia, but it's getting people who didn't have these experiences before to either experience them for the first time, or for people who did experience them again. I'm pretty sure that if PlayStation's is successful, we're undoubtedly going to get, like, SNK and other companies are going to probably get in with their versions of a mini system. Sega's
well, they've already announced one of them, the Sega, but it's been pushed back.
No, yeah, well, here's the thing. Sega did not develop their micro system in-house. They actually outsourced it, and they did this already, and it was one of the worst mini systems ever. So, because... Like, Sega's like, oh, here, at games, here you go, here's Streets of Rage, here's Vector Man, like, do something with this, like, we know more about this than you, but, like, do this, and make it the best thing ever, and it's like, but we don't know what to, we like these games, but, like, you can do it, it's like, Sega just made one of those bad decisions, but in any case,
All right, let's move on because I actually want to jump into our Facebook group because we had a really good discussion this week with our Facebook group.
Right, but I just wanted to mention just a few things in closing. SNK is about to launch in the next week or so, the SNK Arcade Classic. It's literally a small mini arcade cabinet with a 3.5-inch screen, and you can play it on your desk and also connect it to a big TV. And play, like, all the SNK stuff. So Metal Slug and Samurai Blade, you know, The Last Blade and all that. So there's that. I'm pretty sure PC Engine, the TurboGrafx-16, they'll probably go ahead and make their own stuff, too. And also, remember, Nintendo had the N64 Classic patented. So we're undoubtedly going to get that. And maybe even a Game Boy Classic, too. So we are in an age of the Classic. And I'm all for it. You know, we get to experience these games, you know, for the first time in some cases. And it's like, you know, for the people who are still alive today that made these games 20 years ago, it warms their heart to know there's a whole generation of people experiencing this. Like, in my last thought, when I went to Longhorn Steakhouse to go see Avengers Infinity War, I saw two kids and I thought they were playing with their phones. And it turns out they were playing with their Game Boy Advance and a Game Boy, I think, Micro Advance. And it kind of, like, warmed my heart because it said, you know what? These are parents that just said, you know what? We're, like, these were great things, great systems, great game systems. And this is what, you know, what we grew up on. And it's still great. And they were just having a blast. So it's the dawn of a new age, in a sense. Anyways, yes. Okay. Thank you. I just want to get that out of myself. So let's move on to our first... Okay, actually, that sounded really wrong. Okay, I just wanted to get that out of my head. So, let's move on.
Okay. Yeah. Topic of the week, mini consoles. With the announcement of the PS Classic, it seems like the nostalgia wave for mini consoles isn't going to end anytime soon. What do you guys think of these things? Cool, lame, or money grab? Dominic says, they're a cool money grab. Fun for collectors and fans, an intro for newcomers, profit for the makers. Overall, a win-win. DJ says, I like them. If you can find them in stores for their MSRP, it's a pretty cool thing to add to a collection. However, all the turds that buy them out and sell them are turds. Yes. Yes, they are, DJ. Thank you. Matt says, depends entirely on the console. Nintendo succeeds because many of the games they choose to put on there stand the test of time. Others do not, and I'm not sure we're ready to spend more time grinding in Final Fantasy VII again. Price point is also huge. $80 for the NES Classic is pushing it. The only way these can continue to succeed is to undercut the market. I have a friend looking for Parappa the Rapper, but used copies are insanely priced. The real benefit of these is having something that works, which my aging NES and Genesis are becoming increasingly difficult to get up and running.
Right. Hold on.
There's an edit. If Tenchu is added to the lineup, I'm getting one.
Tenchi?
Tenchi.
The Ninja Assassin one?
I guess so. I guess that's a game for the PlayStation. Or was it Tenchu?
Yeah, I think it was Tenchu.
Tenchu, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Tenchu's... That's a game I wish I could have played more, but there's actually a game on the Vita called Shinobito. It's similar. It's a samurai game, but one of the nice things is that, like, it's stealth action, so, you know, you sneak around and you dispatch enemies with your samurai sword. But anyways, also there's another game that's like that called Aragami. Definitely check that one out. But anyways, yeah, so he brings up a lot of good points. For starters,
yeah.
We completely forgot about Parappa the Rapper. That, I remember, was a huge thing. The demo disc that I used to play from Pizza Hut had it. There was a big billboard sign about it one time. We were driving to Pennsylvania, me, my mom, my sister, and so there was that. And it was like, you know, they were kind of, I thought it was adorable because it was a little puppy with a hat on, but it was, you know, Parappa the Rapper. And that there screams the soul of PlayStation in the 90s. Like, it's just the color,
exactly,
the rap, the hip hop, the soul. You know, this really interesting, cool rhythm game. It was, like, something for, like, everybody. And I actually just, you know, as you recall, a couple episodes, I did replay that. And, yeah, it's still pretty hard. But he has a point. Like, finding some of these games is really hard. Finding them in a good condition is expensive. And then a lot of the used game systems that we have, they can be refurbished and repaired, but they can become hard, like, pretty, you know, difficult to run, you know, after a while, you know, like, like right now I got a PS2 from a launch model PS2. It still works, but, you know, like, you have to get lucky a little bit sometimes. And my PS3, like, it's still going good, but one time it overloaded and stopped, and that was because it was just choked with dust and I had to clean it. But, and even my PS4, like, I've noticed, like, a couple things here and there. So just, that's the thing. These things have wear and tear. There's also a study that was done that, like, even though you can take care of your Blu-ray discs, your CDs and stuff like that, but after so many decades, it's going to deteriorate. It's just the way things are. It's kind of like, you know, the Titanic. The Titanic's been sunk for close to 100 years now, and it's like it's eventually going to turn into a giant orange blob at the bottom of the ocean. It's just like everything never really, like, lasts forever. It just, like, it deteriorates. So having these systems is another thing, because these are... all that these systems are powered on is just a small little computer system with no moving parts. So they have the cape, as long as they don't get any kind of moisture or anything like that, they have the ability to last a very long time.
All right. Veronica says, I tend to feel like this happens in a lot of areas in gaming. Character models, game modes, console types, etc. Something becomes widely popular and everyone needs to do it. Look at a Battle Royale game. With PUBG and Fortnite having such success, a lot of other games decided to add it, like Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Dying Light, Bad Blood, or they just made an entire game of it, like Radical Heights or Cuisine Royale. Seriously, Cuisine Royale. Arg. They did the hardware PlayStation VRV to battle the Nintendo handheld. Move controllers, Kinetic, and PlayStation Move, or whatnot. I feel like developers and bigwigs say, just get it out and make money off it ASAP, and then it dies down and there's no more money in it. If I had to choose one to have made, I would love a Game Boy DS version with about 100 games on it. That would be awesome.
Veronica has a point, that, you know, like, in the sense of every company copies another company. That's been, like, the golden rule of technology. It's just a matter of how much you can copy off of somebody and get away with it versus before it becomes, like, just plagiarism or ripping off something. She's right. Like, back in the when Nintendo invented the Wii motion control that, like, well, actually, we can go back even further. PlayStation had, you know, the core games, and then Nintendo said, okay, we'll get some core games on our system for the N64. Then the PS2 happened, and, you know, then that's when GameCube finally shifted to the disc-based systems versus the cartridge. And then, of course, Xbox entered the race. Then when the Wii introduced Wii motion controls, Sony and Microsoft introduced the PlayStation Move system and the Microsoft Kinect respectively. And then, you know, for the first time ever, Nintendo now finally has an online service system, but that's after so many years of not having one, but trying to, like, follow the lead of PlayStation and Xbox. So it's just, you know, everybody copies off of other people or tries to be, like, you know, answer their competitor, but they're, you know, get an answer to the competition. Here's the thing, though. Competition breeds creativity, unmistakably. And, you know, it gets people to think harder, to think faster, to think better, to think smarter, to think outside the box. I mean, Sony did have an opportunity here to think outside the box with what a mini system could do. I think they could have honestly added a DualShock controller and maybe instead of 20 games, 40 games, maybe, you know, something along those lines. Or maybe even trophies, you know, for anybody who wants to get, you know, trophies for the games. That would be pretty badass. But they decided not to really go forth and do that. So that's, like, I think, like, that's what, you know, Veronica has a point, because, you know, people have to, like, stop just shamelessly copying. If you're going to get inspiration off somebody, do so in a very public and open-minded fashion. Do so in a very open-minded fashion that is different.
Okay. Rocco says, I think they're a good idea on the condition that all games for that console should be available via download or memory stick or other. For there to be 15 to 20 games is kind of dumb.
Right, like, so that just brings me to my last point. I think that at this point, it is possible to develop these things with to have a lot more games. I mean, the NES Classic having 20, that's great. But I honestly think at this point, you can go harder and faster with, like, 30 or 40 games and have them be a variety of other titles out there. Maybe even, like, you know, if they were really nice, stuff that was that you couldn't get in the West, but you can get in Europe or in Japan, and just, you know, localize it or something, you know, or at least translate it. I don't know.
Rob says, money grab, straight up, even if you could update them. I'd like to be more articulate about it, but I don't think a strong arm gimmick is needed.
Right, yeah.
Molly says, I wish Tamagotchi would make a comeback.
To be fair, I think it is. There's actually a young man I met. He's making Toe Jam and Earl Back into the Groove, which is the fourth installment and a continuing successor to Toe Jam and Earl. The game was announced 2 years ago from Adult Swim Games, but now the game's actually coming out, hopefully by November, for all systems, including the Switch. And when I went to PAX West, the one guy, he had a Tamagotchi. He had a working Tamagotchi on him, and he was taking care of it. And I said, that's the man I want in charge of a Toe Jam and Earl game. So, yeah, I think it's good. But good point. I mean, was there something else, too? There's Tamagotchis, and then there was something else in that we're getting.
Probably a copycat.
There was a Pikachu Tamagotchi, I remember that.
Andrew says, in my opinion, it's cool money grab that has undertones of lame. Having these games come out on these systems is cool. It allows new people to experience classics while still supporting the respective company. This is a real boon for parents. This is a real boon for parents with younger children, as it gives them an easy way to share their childhood. It's lame, and I believe this is to be a pretty unanimous thought across the gaming public. Everyone would rather see these games put out on main platforms instead of standalone box. Emulation for these games is not difficult in the grand scheme of things, and people would eat this pack up. If Nintendo sold a digital NES for $80 and it came with all those games, imagine how much more money they would have made, as more people could have purchased it. Couple that with the potential of those games when them being sold separately after a few months, and the pile of money that Nintendo and similarly Sony's up-and-coming physical retro box could produce seems pale in comparison to a digital version. Thank you, Andrew. Katie says, it's a cute novelty item, but I'm at the point in my gaming career where I could give a shitty less about a handful of retro games on an overpriced Raspberry Pi. It's fine as a nostalgic piece for some people, but not really my thing.
Right. So, it's just, like I said, it's not going to be a surefire hit. It just depends. But what Nintendo was really good at was that finally understanding that a good chunk of its audience is people who grew up on Nintendo, and they have that nostalgic memory for what they played. And, you know, Sony's hoping that that happens here too, but we'll have to wait and see. Sega could have done a great job, but like I said, they had that at-game debacle, and I don't know if, I mean, I'm thinking that if Sega really wants to get in the good graces of people, they just got to build it internally in-house. And we'll see what happens with the SNK, because that comes out next week, I think, but that's $100, but there's a lot of games for it, and has all that capability. So we'll see. You know, I think that's going to be a big indicator. By the time this is out, the SNK Mini will be out, but check it out. Just check sales data, like look around and see if like that becomes a thing. Because if that becomes a big thing, we're going to see a lot more. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see like a Neo Geo Pocket Mini or something with like 30 games on it.
There you go. Okay, that brings us to the end of our show. Let's figure out and let everybody know how they can get in touch with you, Roberto.
All right. First up, PlayStation Network ID is VectorMan88. That is his response to the greatest Sega Genesis character ever, VectorMan. Then you can find me on Twitter at Jehuty88, Jehuty88. I am kind of considering just changing it to Major Sloth, but I'll let you know when that happens. In any case, we also have Snapchat, Major Sloth 1988, Instagram, Major Sloth 1988, Facebook, Roberto Rob Nieves. I'm interacting on the GameStuff podcast. Then I mentioned my PlayStation Network ID. Oh, stackup.org, military gaming charity. I'm very active there, writing articles, hands-on previews, and stuff like that. And also, But Why Though Podcast, which is another website as a video game contributor. So check that one out, too, as well.
Okay, you can find Matt at Missed Enough on all social medias. That's MISTAHNUFF. You can find me on Steam at Kalai21. That's KALAI, the number 21. You can find me on the PlayStation Network at Miley1978. That's MAILE 1978. You can find me on Xbox at Miley21. And you can find me on Twitter at Kalai21 or talking in our Facebook group. Or working on the Game Stuff Twitter, which I'm trying to get better at, which I'm very bad at Twitter, but hey, I'm working on it. If you want to help us out, you can also check out our sponsors. We are sponsored by Amazon. You can go to provinggamer.com, click on any of the Amazon links, and do your shopping like normal. It doesn't cost you a thing and helps out the site. Also, we have a link in our show notes to the Humble Bundle. We support our Humble Bundle charity is Extra Life. Just click on that link. You get some really cool cheap PCs, every once in a while PlayStation games, and every once in a while Nintendo games. If you like our show, check out our other shows. We have The Trophy Horse, and we have the Nintendo Dual Screens. I just need to thank a couple people that have helped us with the show. I'd like to thank Isaac Sego, and I'd also like to thank the band Take Away the Ugly. Both of their links are in my show notes if you'd like to check them out. And I want to give out a shout out to Brixton the Cow, who is the singer of the band Take Away the Ugly and is a friend of mine. And congratulations on becoming a father again, man. So
great job, man. Yeah, congrats.
Okay. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Game Stuff.
All right, everybody, have fun, stay safe. Make it a good one. Play games. See you next week.